This is episode 464 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of April 18th through April 24th, 2026. What's new this week? Washington State Everett Anarchist Book Fair, April 25th, from Mainstream Everett Post. Quote, the Everett Anarchist Book Fair at the Charm and Strange Clubhouse is hosting a community event centered on independent literature, art, and open dialogue. This event creates a welcoming space for those interested in creativity, community, and discovering something outside the mainstream. Whether you're an avid reader or simply curious about new experiences in Everett, this event offers an opportunity to connect, learn, and explore. Unquote. Hope we'll get a report back. I have a curious...
With ambulance chasers like these, who needs enemies? From Montreal Counter Info. A long and occasionally disconnected rant by someone appropriately furious about the level of discourse and support about Palestine, at least if their rendition of facts is accurate, which, sadly, we have little reason to doubt. Quote, acknowledging how political parties use resistance movements to claim authority is not a dismissal of affinity for freedom fighters, for those that show us how to resist from the bleakest of places. The spirit of rebellion does not emerge from Hamas or the PA, and will exist beyond them and oftentimes despite them. To critique the authoritarians is to increase the capacity for the fight. Freedom cannot come to be by practicing what you are fighting against. Authoritarians are not the voice of the rebellion, they are the leeches that steal its soul. Unquote. Quote. Maybe you should have said quote two, the sequel to quote. I think that could have been a fun little bit. Quote, racism evolved its claws to become identity politics. So the first story about Egypt is to point out the obvious. Community is not a static unit. Community is ever evolving and made up of its people with all their social conditions and their contradictions. Community, when we essentialize it as an unchallenged, protected category, will often be the voice of heteronormative, conservative, male, and religious authority. The second story about Palestine is to challenge the idea that resistance is based on command, that authoritarians are those who plant the seeds of resistance rather than those who suppress it. Highlighting the voices of authoritarians is a betrayal of all those who fought and will continue to fight. Unquote. I could go on. Plenty of good points made here, including some scathing examples of idiocy among activists. Blah. That was, with ambulance chasers like these, who needs enemies?
Portland, a message to Day Wireless from Rose City Counter Info, a communique on why Day Wireless got targeted, collaborating with ICE, and noting that some cop cars were tagged as well. Quote, Day Wireless outfits ICE with radios and other surveillance tech so they can more easily carry out the ethnic cleansing ordered by Trump and his collection of ghouls in cheap suits. Those of us with a conscience must do whatever we can to throw sand in the gears of this fascist machine. Unquote.
Deep suits is an interesting. I don't know. I don't know why that stood out to me. As a fan of expensive suits, I guess it makes sense, actually. I don't know. $3,000 suit, I shouldn't be sitting in this chair, to be honest. In Contempt number 6 from incontempt.noblogs.org. Announcement of the new issue, info on various prisoner efforts, fundraisers, report backs, prisoner writings, data points, calls to action, etc. Marius Mason, Palestinian prisoners, Casey Gooden, Hibachi Lamar, Malik Muhammad, who is getting even worse treatment than the usual bullshit, and more. Many links to more content, as well as what seems to be the full In Contempt number 6.
Oakland, Anarchist Utopian Potluck Picnic, May 2nd from anarchist-utopian.news. Brief upbeat call for a two-hour event. There are attendance prizes and an anarchist history quiz contest. Sounds like fun. Why am I so suspicious?
Missouri Collective supports unhoused neighbors through mutual aid and anarchist principles. From prismreports.org, a site that seeks to, quote, disrupt harmful narratives and to inform movements for justice, unquote. This is the kind of article one would expect from a site with that description. This article discusses... This article discusses Komak, a service for the homeless that echoes Food Not Bomb-style practice, only with annual de-escalation training. Quote, Komak describes its work as radical hospitality. In contrast to some charitable homelessness services, They set no expectations of sobriety, employment, or religious affiliation. No one is required to prove need. COMAC members also offer hospitality to people who have been convicted of violent and abusive crimes. No one can be banned from service, but core members do communicate about clients that volunteers should stay alert around. Unquote. There's also a little advice here for those who want to start their own such project.
The Jews Who Ate Pork Till the Pigs Were Called, from feministfoodjournal.com. This Substack is, quote, a magazine and podcast dedicated to a feminist food future, unquote. This essay is a long and intense history of Jews against Zionism that starts out with the story of the Jews who rejected Orthodox strictures and a Jewish state as a desirable option. Quote, if we're going to walk away from the Western nation state, then we have to create our own sources of safety, care, and pleasure. In our present moment, it's tempting to ditch culture in the face of ever-escalating genocide and fascist violence, to pivot to a politics of survival, to treat a library, a newspaper, a dinner, a play, or a poem as silly and extraneous. In the words of a cynical turn-of-the-century journalist, how dare we eat ice cream puffs when we should be drinking blood and throwing bombs? But our enemies are not so naive. They are intentionally destroying cultural organizing and social infrastructure because they understand and fear its power. The Trump administration has cut funds to libraries and art organizations en masse. They've defunded public broadcasting and hit newsrooms with FCC investigations. They've cut food stamps and food safety investigations. Meanwhile, the Israeli state shells, detonates, loots, and sets fires to libraries containing rare books, hundreds of years of knowledge, precious religious texts, and sheltering families, unquote. This site is a weird place to find this pro-Palestinian, pro-Jewish, pro-anarchist essay, to which I say, fuck yeah. Also, excellent title, even if cops shouldn't be called pigs.
I think we should call them dogs.
I
think I'll start that trend. Because we all have feelings about dogs, and they all obviously line up with our feelings about police. See, you agree with me. Anarchist architect... I just decided.
As one does.
Yeah. Anti-fascist architecture proposes new modes of practice for a collective political future. From the Architects newspaper, another entry in the argument that anarchism is a kind of socialism and in the conflation of anti-fascism and anarchism. Sigh. A book review of a book co-written by someone who helps run the site the review was posted on. So that's worth noting, for whatever it's worth. A book from within architectural studies and theory that promotes some kind of anarchist/humanist vision. Yes, yes, hashtag not our anarchy, but moving on. Quote, the anarchist strain of socialism is often a marginal presence in the factionalist quarrels that can consume the left, but Roche and Santa Lucia deserve credit for its application here. Because architecture is so thoroughly implicated in the political economy that has brought us to this crisis, the cost of wrenching it free will be great and will result in destabilization and dissolution that breaks down the practice of architecture to its most fundamental parts. What's left might simply be networks of people organizing the resources they have on hand to meet the most urgent needs of their communities, a practice of mutual aid. As such, some of the least overtly architectural projects, like the ABC No Rio squatter space, given over to mutual aid by Manhattan's Lower East Side punks, begin to look like the most viable ways to reinvent architecture along anti-fascist lines. Unquote. Fun to read through a different kind of anarchist lens. I probably wouldn't read the book, but nice to know it exists.
No Killer Tech, Anarchist Attacks on Ghost Robotics, from Ben Passmore Comics, a page on Patreon. A comic about anti-tech actions, and a blog post by Passmore, who expresses, quote, complicated thoughts/feelings, unquote, about people bringing guns to protests and specifically the Prairie Land defendants. He then asks for info from his readers about how to support the Prairie Land folks, which may be a sneaky way to get his readers to check out the support site, but also indicates a level of ignorance that casts doubt on where he's getting his information from. The whole gun question is a cultural disconnect for anybody who's not in Texas, but in this case also speaks to a lack of understanding of violence against protesters, which does not require the excuse of guns to be occasionally overwhelming.
Lines in the Sand, from With Whatever Weapons Distro. Quote, to commemorate Palestinian Prisoners Day, April 17th, 2026, we are sharing lines in the sand, writings on the Gaza Solidarity Encampment and campus flood at UC Berkeley from an anarchist prisoner of war, a collection of writing Casey Goonan produced while imprisoned at the Santa Rita Jail, awaiting trial for actions carried out in solidarity with the Palestinian people enduring and resisting genocide in Gaza. Unquote. Multiple downloads provided for essays and poetry by Goonan. The full book is 209 pages and starts with a quotation by Fred Moten and Stefano Harney and another by George Jackson, covering, or at least alluding to, many bases there.
How Anarchists Saw the Iranian Revolution, Part 1, from Anarchistories by Tom Goyens. While I think I remember disliking Goyens' take on anarchist thought, this is an accessible and informative history on at least some anarchist responses to the Iranian Revolution in the 1970s. International, there are quotations from Italy, France, Spain, England, and Germany, and with a few scathing political cartoons, this is a worthwhile read. I will leave it to the better-learned historians among us to refute any significant bias Goyens promotes here. Best-case scenario, reading about analysis from then will bypass some stupid conversations people might want to have today.
For Anzac Day, the fight for anarchism is the fight for peace. From the Polar Blast, the Eortea Class War Site, a quick and vague anti-militarism post that states that for war to end, capitalism must end. Check.
Italy, 18 anarchists sentenced for Alfredo Cospito's solidarity demo from Freedom News UK. Sentences range from a year and a half to 5.5 years inside. More people are on trial for the same protest. Quote, as the defense lawyers emphasized, most of the defendants were not convicted for specific actions or events, but rather for moral complicity or facilitating the conduct of others. Unquote. In any case, no remorse. If I were going to have a tombstone, that would be on it.
Statement of anarchist comrade Nikos Romanos from Act for Freedom Now. A personal and poignant statement about what it's like to be in prison, Romanos compares it to being in a refrigerator and to the identity-negating experience of being convicted under false accusations. Quote, I'll consider it more honest, although honest is a big word. I'll consider it better if someone were to tell me, you know what, you're going to jail because we don't like you. Because we don't like you, because we think you're a person who should pay for certain things. I consider that more honest, and in part, it's also defensible. To know that I'm in jail because I know that certain circles don't like me. To be in jail, and the argument being a bag, from my point of view, is incomprehensible. Unquote. This is not only a good beginning to understanding what being in prison is like, but it also starts to bring home the bureaucratic ducking and hiding and gaslighting that Kafka is known for writing about. That was Statement of Anarchist Comrade Nikos Romanos.
Anarchism and Mysticism, Anarchist Ecology as Respect for the Earthly Sacred, from Autonomies by Simone Royo Hernandez. Starts out with a bang, God is a lie, then claims mysticism is, quote, the only form of spirituality compatible with anarchist materialism, unquote. Blows it, at least in my eyes, by quoting Negri and by this paragraph. Quote, in the case of another thinker, Tony Negri, who is close to anarchism for having developed a non-authoritarian form of Marxism, he chose St. Francis of Assisi to illustrate his philosophical and political proposal, which he links to a materialist spirituality that finds divinity in the productive creativity of the multitude and in the effort to persevere in the very being of that free and autonomous multitude. Unquote. Ugh. Don't trust the word productive anywhere near a communist. Sorry. That said, there is food for thought here, at least for any of us looking to poke anarchy pseudopodially.
Claim of responsibility for the incendiary attack on Vasilis Campanero's law office. Direct action cells. From Dark Knights. A long communique. Quote, anyone who allows a comrade from the Ampelokipi case to be condemned bloodlessly and without cost, should expect the passage of time to drag them into a life devoid of purpose and direction, for that is the only way to describe the acceptance of defeat. Arcadia Street on 31st October 2024 was marked by an explosion of choices, by the stride of a man, a sure and steady step toward a head-on collision. A critical moment, a moment of choices, lies before us today. Unquote. Also a call to action. Solidarity.
Update on the trials of Bandung anarchist prisoners from Act for Freedom Now. A brief list of sentences or updates for a half dozen people arrested during the unrest, some of them for arson. No links for more info or anything.
Audio and video. Hi, Bachi Lamar. Share some thoughts plus updates on Schnachli. From The Final Straw Radio, an hour and 17 minutes. The first 16 minutes are a member of the support team for Schnachli talking about his case. He's a communist who has been in solitary for over 20 years, so yet another reason to hex the Texas prison system in particular. Starting at 18 minutes is a year-old talk with Lamar. He has recently been released from prison, for which we are all celebrating. Prison phones do not make for good recordings, which I'm sure is part of the point, intentionally or otherwise. Lamar is a picture book example of an anarchist who stayed active in prison, something that is good for all of us to contemplate these days.
How We Make the Dugout, Step-by-Step Guide to Making a Black Radical Podcast, from bio.site/thedugoutpodcast, with various options to listen available there, all of them corporate. 36 minutes. Has a little history of the dugout. Mostly this has plenty of helpful logistical information, but nothing here about anarchist ideas or even practice, nor black radical politics. In fact, arguably some of the logistical info they provide is anti-anarchist as they focus on mega corporate tools, no open source or even any reference to alternative tools or anarchist infrastructure is even mentioned. Not even an acknowledgement that corporate media or tools are an issue. This was disappointing. Moving on.
Hey everyone, this is Artemis talking about the topic of the week posted on April 19th for the 26th of April, and I'm joined by
Hibiscus.
The topic of the week is Nothing Ever Happens. Does it ever feel like nothing ever happens? You may have heard the phrase before, which is a bit of a meme now, but the basic idea is that there are no global events that fundamentally change the world order. Current events occur, horrible, Palestine, Sudan, some shitty election, and great, Luigi Mangione in the recent string of arsons. Things do happen, but the premise is that the power balance of the world, either between classes or states, fundamentally remains the same or reflects those of recent history. I'm reminded of The End of History and The Last Man by Francis Fukuyama, which I will quote at length. Quote, what we may be witnessing is not just the end of the Cold War or the passing of a particular period of post-war history, but the end of history as such, that is, the end of a point of mankind's ideological evolution and the universalization of the Western liberal democracy as the final form of human government. This is not to say there will be no longer events to fill the pages of Foreign Affairs' yearly summaries of international relations, for the victory of liberalism has occurred primarily in the realm of ideas or consciousness and as yet incompatible in the real world or incomplete in the real world of the material world. But there are powerful reasons for believing that it is the ideal that will govern the material world in the long run.
Now, Fukuyama is criticized for simplifying world developments, and many responded that the rise of Salafism and jihadist strains of Islam contradict his optimistic view of ascendant liberalism. One could reply now that the current and ongoing world conditions are just an extension of liberalism's attempt to solidify itself against the old world, though modern Salafism is actually quite modern, as are most traditionalisms. Regardless, it feels a growing number of people want something new and better, but see no opportunity for it. Naturally, I see Wayne Price commenting to affirm the need for a well-organized anarchist labor movement. I'd like to reply it is less effective than the jihadist attempts. At least they took the fight to the American corporate world. Too soon? Equally, all the new or so-called new revolutionary projects fail and don't produce exciting, world-shaking impacts. There is always some new attempt to revolutionize thought or ideas, and they stay stuck in academia or Instagram algorithms. Between the lack of revolutionary, or if you prefer, insurrectionist, or just fun, projects and world events, seemingly always returning us to some circa 2012 conditions, it does indeed seem like nothing ever happens. In my own life, I admit this leads to some strong depressive feelings. It seems no projects or actions I take feel important. Maybe the anarcho-nihilists may reply that I need to give up hope and go redact the police officer. But I think many of us can admit that not even the nihilists are doing that either. And with flock safety, etc., good luck. Wanting things to happen isn't directly a matter of hope, but of growing exhausted of the way the world is. There is no maximizing freedom under these conditions.
Questions. Is it fair to say a growing number of people feel stuck or express a similar idea similar to nothing ever happens? Why is that? Is nothing ever happens an accurate depiction of the current world order? And how do you deal with what seems to be a time of inertia? So let's talk about the comments real quick. Yeah. I thought some of these were pretty good. Definitely some people being like, oh, well, you're just boring. You don't see what's cool. And then they provide nothing about what they're doing or what they're doing that's cool. There was a couple I wanted to reference from Geo3 Sun. I think you like this one too.
Yeah.
That's why it's the boring dystopia. Everything is commodified and even rebellion and alternative culture. I don't know if people who have tried just about everything can possibly be entertained anymore. I don't think current events happen for our own edification. You have to find your own things to do in the world. Post-capitalist desire begins with acid communism, which is a change in consciousness and a break from the commodity form. Academic rigor is the rigor mortis of imagination. That's why I prefer speculative fiction. And then this comment, I largely prefer alkaline anarchy to acid communism. what's your take on this comment?
Well, I really liked the articulation, which, you know, is a fairly straightforward statement that everything is commodified, even rebellion and alt culture. I think, you know, in particular, I think of the things that have been like some of the like big discourses of like, you know, some of the recent years, like thinking about like, you know, kink at pride being like one of the things that like comes up in the queer community as like something worthy of a contentious discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an example for me of how pride, which is hugely commercialized as it is, like that sort of commercialization and commodification of like queer rebellion ends up also engaging in discourses about sexuality and like alternative sexual practices.
Right.
And then it's just, I mean, once you're having those conversations, you're not having conversations about what Pride is actually doing as a political movement.
Mm-hmm.
To take kind of a more like maybe accessible and neutral example.
Yeah, I consider Pride right now to be a neutral example. Yeah, I mean, immediately what came to mind is the classic, like as soon as you start getting into like lefty, radical, anarchist politics, at least for me and people I know, you get exposed pretty quickly to the whole capitalism assimilates its own contradictions and like counterforce. And I think that's why a lot of people feel stuck, because when they do something, it just feels like it can be like they'll see it on a TV show the next day and they're just like, you know what I mean? Like the assimilation of radical aesthetics. I mean, the classic is the Che t-shirt,
right?
Or now you see like rebellions like Andor, like liberals are like, oh yeah, this is great. And then even like I know some people I would be considered radical like Andor. And sure, it's something that it's fiction and can help you reflect and see yourself. But it's also, if Disney can produce a TV show about rebelling against the empire in a way that's kind of obviously influenced by contemporary political issues, like in what way are we being a radical if Disney can use it? Like, is it still within the bounds of what capitalism is comfortable with? And so I always kind of come back to that. And just the term boring dystopia, like the banality of everyday life, mm-hmm. comes to mind for me. And I think that's why I'm sympathetic with the author, because I feel very similar to that. Also, there's some comments here, which I think just totally misinterpret the author, being like, oh, so you think the jihadists are like have the right idea and that's what we should be doing? When I think the point is that like the rebellious people are supposed to bring about the, you know, progress in humanity are the ones that aren't doing it. And then you have these people who see themselves as very traditional fighting against the modern world. It's not that what they're doing is what anarchists should be doing. I think it was also just a joke about 9/11 that went over people's heads.
Yeah, and which I think is a pretty good example of like a time that the world was changed.
Right. I think that was a moment. I think Fisher, no. I feel like I know, maybe Fisher, was it Fisher that wrote like 9/11 was a real moment? Maybe this is someone writing about Fisher using Fisher's analysis that like, you know, the Gulf War didn't happen, quote unquote, right? But then like 9/11 did. Yeah. Like there are moments where things happen. And like, because, you know, you had, the USSR had fallen apart just a couple of years, you know, really only a handful of years ago. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, like the US is the top of the food chain again on, you know, uncontested. And then the heart of the empire in many ways, the financial heart, was struck directly.
Right. I mean, it kind of, it revealed a vulnerability that, you know, I mean, the US felt untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the response to the exploitation of that vulnerability has been a huge reactionary current in the empire. You know, the number one thing that I think many people think of in terms of post 9/11 is the surveillance state.
Yes.
And the expansion of anti-terrorism laws and
the terrorism task force, like the apparatus, right, and how they even operate.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, we may not be ideologically endorsing those things, but I think that in terms of how it affected other groups and other movements, the influence is undeniable.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to look at another quote here from Max Stirner, who came back from the grave to engage with this topic of the week, saying, like Fukuyama's, don't you think you're meant to, you're meant to take the, don't think you're meant to take the aphorism literally. Capitalism has proved to be far more resilient and absorptive than feudalism. Flux is even welcomed for new markets, of which the demand is inexhaustible. You need Bolshevism to pave the way for the oligarchs a century later. You need Maoists for Danism. Put another misattributed quote, it's easier to imagine the end of the world than capitalism because this shit can go on just forever until nothing does. And I really like that too. Like, that's what we're getting at. And that also gets the whole, and we don't have to go down this road, is like the whole, like, fascism in many ways, like Mussoliniism helped modernize Italy in a very historically similar way that Bolshevism and the communist movements did, that they basically just fulfilled capitalist development, which was funny because these rebels also acknowledged they were doing that. Like, they're in these backwards countries and they needed to just modernize, but they just thought they were going to do something after the modernization. And then they didn't, they just were just shittier versions of the Western systems at that point, like Stalinism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think also that the comment on sort of the impossibility, like how much it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism, is especially resonant because that's also the thing that builds the inertia and that builds the inability to it. It's one of capitalism's reinforcing mechanisms.
Yes.
The illusion of eternity.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to the questions. Is it fair to say a growing number of people feel stuck or express an idea similar to nothing ever happens? Why is that? You want to take that one first?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I see what I see happening in terms of people who are not politically radical already is somebody gets quote unquote radicalized. They want to do something. The model that they see is hold up a protest sign. They go and they hold up a protest sign. Somebody else sees them holding up a protest sign and they say, what's that going to do correctly? And then the experience further entrenches the inability of action.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. And it's what's interesting too, is, yeah, I feel like a lot of people are like, I mean, it also gets to the, it's easier to imagine the end of the world. And there's some interesting like papers and like YouTube videos I watched, like some of those like video essays or whatever, where people almost fantasize about the apocalypse because it's at least somehow like there's more freedom or something. It's just different. Mm-hmm. It's this great equalizer.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, I'm almost, and then now I'm reminded of Fight Club. I can't remember quite the book's quote of this, but the movies that, you know, that, you know, blowing up the credit card companies, we're one step closer to equilibrium. Mm-hmm. You know, like this idea of like the rich can't keep doing this, and at least the poor have a chance of something.
Right.
Right.
Or like, look at The Walking Dead, right?
Right, exactly.
It explores like 80 different kinds of societies.
Right.
Like, there's so much possibility.
Exactly. In the absence of this centralization of society, right, or this totalitarianism, in a broad sense of that word, there's the possibility for experimentation.
Yeah.
But experimentation now, think about it. Like, again, anytime you experiment, there's the fear it's going to be assimilated,
right?
But nothing's assimilating these communal or even tyrannical like communes in The Walking Dead or whatever, right? Because there's no larger apparatus,
right,
to pull from or to pull them into. And yeah, I hear people say that they just rather have, they'd almost rather have anything else than this, because it is just so unfulfilling and so boring. Which is why it's also important for our politic, or if you want to be pedantic, your anti-politic, to be fun and interesting to people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crime think, but was it 10 years ago, maybe longer? Fuck, I don't remember. Is the your politics are boring as fuck? Just people don't want to be going to book clubs and these boring ass meetings with agendas. What they want is the possibility of something different. And when a majority, the biggest, ironically though, on the other hand, the biggest parties, radical parties, are all like leftist nostalgia for like the USSR.
Yeah.
Because at least that seemed, maybe part of that is because it seemed interesting to have a counterweight to hegemony.
I think it's also an accessible model. Like, true. I think that like the main quote unquote model for anarchism is one that you have to be able to access yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when I was in high school, I kind of thought there was some sort of like rule you had to follow to like be a punk. So I was like, oh, I'm not a punk, because like, even though I like longed for it and wanted it, I was like, I'm just not.
I hate to tell you, as I show my straight edge tattoo, there is a rule of being a punk.
Yeah, but yeah, like it was like, it didn't occur to me that you just get to decide that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like an invitation, there's no like secret club,
right?
And I was like, well, like, I listen to the music I listen to, but like, you know, I'm just not cool enough.
Right.
Which is a very silly example, but like, I think that
I think you're cool enough.
Well, thank you. But I think that being an anarchist requires an additional step,
mm-hmm,
in escaping.
Yes.
If you join a Marxist-Leninist party, they'll just tell you what to do and how to act and whatever. And if you're an anarchist, maybe there are norms in your community, but you have to figure that out on your own, and you have to decide like how you're going to act and make choices about how you're going to act without somebody like wagging a finger at you, at least hopefully.
Nah, that's never happened to me before. I mean, yeah. And I think that's what I want from anarchist spaces, but it still feels like, well, even then it's like, I think we're kind of lucky that our spaces are at least still kind of loosey-goosey about a lot of stuff. They're not very, like, solidified. But then I see and know, like, there's the platformists who do believe in, like, this internal discipline and what is basically an anarchist party line. Or what is it called? I always mess this up. Especifismo? You know what I'm talking about? Especifismo? It's like a, like, South American version of platformism. And I think that's what it's called.
Especifismo, yeah.
Thank you. Or, like, the syndicalists, where there is, like, by the expectation of a particular group form, there is the need for, while definitely, in at least my experience, less demand on personal behaviors than a Marxist-Leninist party, it's still more than I think people want, because what it's doing, particularly the Marxist-Leninist form, reproduces the workplace, which is, I mean, Marx and Lenin acknowledge that, particularly, you know, Marx says the proletarian is disciplined by the workplace, by the factory, and that the party is a mirror to like what becomes Fordism, of which Lenin acknowledges, right? And then later, you know, the Maoists particularly are more so like a militaristic capitalism, like the militarized party, which is also kind of comes from Stalin too. But like they're mirroring the modern world and saying that they're against it, which is the irony. Mm-hmm. It's like it's controlled opposition, but the puppet master is in your head.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'm worried. And my point of mentioning that is how anarchism at times can reproduce that, particularly when it's very labor oriented, of which my anarchism is not. So it's a bit different, but.
But I guess, like, to return to the original point, it's like more, it's still more accessible.
Yes.
By stating that it is.
Yes, more, no, totally.
You know, and so even if there's still underlying rules and underlying unspoken behavioral agreements or whatever,
mm-hmm.
It's still like you have to figure out for yourself that you get to pick
right.
what you believe. Like there's something.
But there's almost so much fear to that too. Because you have to take, people don't like the word responsibility or ownership of yourself. Like you can't be externalizing. You need a strong internal, like, locus of control.
Sure.
Right. You can't have an external, because I feel like it's hard to be an anarchist and like be delegating. That's the word I'm looking for. Your agency.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I mean, we've seen that in our spaces where people do still do that.
Yeah.
Right, where then it ends up centralizing to some people, and then it's interesting. Yeah, and it's like there almost necessarily has to be a mental shift to be an anarchist.
Right.
Or at least, I mean, I don't want to do no true Scotsman fallacy, but like a consistent anarchist, or maybe effective, if you want to say that, a consistent anarchist. Well, again, for the Marxists, they don't want you to do that.
Yeah.
Right. You need to fall in line and follow the party line.
Mm-hmm.
Which again is still, I think that's more comfortable to people because they do that every day of their lives already for work, to pay rent, to follow the law, whatever, exactly. whatever, to be a good worker.
And I think also there's something scary, you know, if you're somebody who does have a sort of moral framework, if you're mm-hmm. coming from that moral framework, there's a fear of making the wrong decision. There's a fear of, well, I choose for myself, if I use my own discernment and my judgment is not reliable, what if I end up doing the wrong thing?
Right.
And that's also part of why I think so many of us push back against, you know, moralizing.
Right.
But to push back against the author a little bit, the final line is, there is no maximizing freedom under these conditions. And I did want to mention, I think that, like, the point of maximizing freedom is to consider the conditions on mm-hmm. some level. It's maximizing freedom within a certain context. And I guess I think from the people who take that step into, maybe they're like just some kind of shitty lifestylist.
I'm just going against the lifestylists.
Sorry, lifestylists. but maybe there's somebody who doesn't take a lot of political action. Maybe there's somebody, but like that's still a step. So maybe they're not maximizing freedom, but maybe they're still pushing out a little bit and making more room for themselves within the world. And maybe, you know, there's a next step, which is something like supporting other people who are doing things, doing prisoner support, you know, making food for your friend who's doing shit and is busy, you know. I think that if you consider maximizing freedom as maximizing it within a context,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I tend towards slightly more optimistic than other people on this recording, but but I think that there are steps and progressions that you can take to eventually get further.
Hmm.
And I'm not talking about just like incrementalism. I'm talking about like making it a world where things can happen.
Right. My interpretation of what the author's saying is kind of still continuing the critique of the anarchist nihilist, is that the anarchist nihilists are, what about is my freedom now? And just maybe the limitations of that, because it's like there fundamentally can't be freedom. Right. You're attempting to find and low and secure your freedom, but I think there's a certain pessimism too that the author is expressing, which is funny because the nihilists are supposed to be these uber pessimists in a lot of ways,
it's many of them, but still believe there's the, they're like, oh, I'm against hope, but also I believe I can do something now. And I also find that to be like, again, so many of them are like, and you push back, you're like, you're not doing anything. And then the facetious answer is, well, I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing because that's bad OPSEC, which is true, but it's also, you're not doing anything. You're doing as little as everyone else, but you read Novatore, and you think you're uber radical. Where he's like, oh, the individual, you know. And that dude did something. I mean, but what happened to him? He got killed by the Italian fascist paramilitaries by exercising your freedom, which is a direct affront to the existence of capitalism, the state, and all these things. It'll kill you or imprison you. And so there is necessarily a material limitation to how far your freedom can go. And is that freedom's possible size or possible expression worth the risk of imprisonment or death? I think that's just something to consider too, you know?
I mean, I think if your world is so unfree that you're risking death by exercising even a modicum of freedom, I think that, why not?
That's a good point though. I mean, that's where it goes is, I think, yeah. But it has to acknowledge, in almost like a Huey Newton's revolutionary suicide, but almost more like insurrectionary suicide, is like, and yet like acknowledging the possible consequences, of which a lot of people choose to not consider. And then when there is the risk, they like run away from it.
Yeah.
You know, which is why some of the strongest individualist anarchists, or those that believed in freedom now and less of an interest in revolution in the future, which are not necessarily at odds, but they've definitely been presented that way in many places, is, they've all died.
Yeah.
Right. They've died or been imprisoned.
So how do you feel? I hope this is okay. We're going a little off, but
fine.
How do you feel about, like, you know, a lot of people after Aaron Bushnell died said like, oh, like, if only he'd like done stuff in his community, which obviously
which he
was
also
bullshit.
Was doing, yeah.
Right? But like, that feels so disingenuous to me.
No, I like, yeah, for sure.
And it's not that I don't believe in doing things in your community, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. It just, at a certain point, enough is enough.
Right. I mean, that was, he took total ownership of himself.
Yeah.
In that moment, right? Of which he wasn't going to play the game that was set out for him in terms of protest. That he took a sense of radical ownership, which for him meant death.
Yeah.
And that his death would, you know, mean something, which some people don't believe in that, which is whatever. And then a lot of people are like, well, the revolution is not going to come from that. And I could agree, whatever you're doing is probably less likely to produce anything anyways. But it's funny, the people that got really uncomfortable and were saying that were the ones that probably already feel bad they don't do anything at all. Or feel like they don't do enough, and their coping mechanism isn't reflecting on themselves. It was shitting on Aaron Bushnell for some reason, which I'm like, what are you getting from that? Like, what do you get? Like, what do you get from shitting on that dude?
Well, I think it's like, it's just the toxic positivity thing.
Is that, yes,
it's,
yes.
It's a flip of that. It's like, if you don't believe that there is hope, like deep down, but you're trying to tell yourself that there is, then those kinds of actions are a huge threat.
Right.
Because
it
sort of tears at the illusion that you're trying to build for yourself for survival. Whereas I think that, you know, to circle back to the anarcho-nihilists, like, what do we do if we decide that revolution is not going to succeed? What is left for us to do? And that doesn't necessarily mean self-immolation. that could mean many, many things, but you have to start with, from the anarcho-nihilist perspective, accepting the reality, not everyone sees it as the reality, of the inevitable failure of attempts at revolution,
mm-hmm.
in order to actually do whatever it is that one needs to do under the circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, if I can reference some people I know, like Jamie, it's the girl dropoutism. To get as far away as you can, and for, and there's different expressions of this. For Jamie, it's about creating resilient communities because for him, it's like, it's not the revolution that's coming. It's this insane, like, peak oil and environmental collapse, and that creating resilient communities that can be free and non-hierarchical, sustainable, all these things afterwards, you know, building the culture now, which is very prefigurative. It's anarchism, but like almost like a rural anarchism, if you want to call it that. Right. Which I feel like, I mean, I'm very sympathetic to that, but you also have to confront, and he does. It's like, not everyone can.
Right.
Not everyone can, because physical limitations, social limitations, your geography, basically your space and time limits that, which a lot of people are uncomfortable with. But they're somehow, yeah, and then, which leads into a whole, like, then what am I supposed to do? And I know people that are like, I just don't want to do anything, right? Because they're like, I'd rather be a worker now. And then, again, gets into the whole, I don't want to die or go to prison. Which kind of leads into the nothing ever happens. Because I'm very sympathetic to nothing ever happens. But then I immediately follow with, but do I believe that because I'm reproducing that in myself?
Yeah.
That enough people say it that it becomes true. And it's hard to know, like, is that true? Is it because we say that and that we all collectively believe nothing ever happens? Even the people that believe things happen act as if nothing ever does, because they just keep doing the same old playbook. That it's like, if you believe something could happen, you'd be doing something else, you know?
I mean, I do think that belief structures these things.
Totally.
Look at markets.
Mm-hmm.
Markets are all belief.
Right.
Like,
it's collective hallucination.
Exactly.
Hmm. What do you think, for the average person, going back to question one for that last part, why is it that people feel this way? What do you think leads to this sense of powerlessness or hopelessness or whatever word you want to use?
I think it's because people want, like, deep in our heart of hearts, we want to have control over our environment. We want to have something better. And, like, I don't think you can feel stuck or bored unless you want something more.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of similar to, if you don't move, you don't notice your chains.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that enough people, I think the chains are tight enough that any movement rattles them. And, right. And that's part of why even people who, you know, have extraordinarily positive personal conditions compared to others, experience that too.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Question number two, and I know I'm real curious what you think about this. Is nothing ever happens an accurate depiction of the current world order?
Well, you seem to already know what I think, but I think it's not. I think it's not destiny.
Hmm.
I think it's not fated that it has to be that way. I think that it's true that the avenues for, you know, political, ideological, worldwide change are very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that because we haven't figured out the secret, nothing will ever happen.
Mm. Interesting.
Certain conditions had to occur for us to reach our current point. And that means that if we can find a way to change the conditions, you know,
mm-hmm.
things will be different.
Hmm.
I guess it's kind of hard to have this conversation too in a post climate change awareness setting, because right. with climate change, we're kind of at the point of, like, we can slow down the rate at which it becomes worse, but it's not reversible.
Right. The Luigi book I read by, was it John Richardson? The amount of, like, those climate scientists who all, like, quit their jobs that he interviewed, or those that are just like, dude, like, holy fuck. Yeah. Like, the people that study it, like, I know, like, there's, like, suicide rates, heart palpitations, anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, yeah. It's I mean, what's the point about talking about revolution if it literally there's no stopping that shit.
Yeah.
Which is where the rural dropout is to me. I feel like sympathetic to because we're going to return, or maybe return's the wrong word, but have conditions similar to the Pleistocene of which they're like, hey, you like it or not, it's coming.
We're so fucked.
I think the nihilist might have said that. Yeah, because I feel like nothing ever happens. It's not correct, but it's also not wrong, that it's more of a, it's an emotional expression at discontent. So it's accurate way of like the zeitgeist in a way. Is it necessarily a material reality? I think it's limited, but I think it's right to talk about what it's meaning for people's psychology.
Yeah.
Then the last question, how do you deal with what it seems to be a time of inertia? Let's hear your hopium optimism.
I think you got to act.
Mm.
It's a time of inertia if you allow yourself to be inert.
Mm-hmm.
And at a bare minimum, just as a basic psychological necessity for, I think, a lot of people, like doing something is a way to keep yourself alive. There's the acting. There's a basic psychological function of acting during a time of inertia. And then I think on top of that, if it isn't inevitable, but you treat it as if it is, then you've lost.
Hmm.
But if there's any speck of possibility that the inertia isn't inevitable and you act, maybe you'll press the right button.
Right. It's entirely hindsight.
Exactly.
You don't know until after, which some of the comments are like, it's all stuck, but you so many of them added, but you never know, which is kind of where I go, is I'm very pessimistic/nihilistic about it. But there's always that, while nothing ever happens, something could always happen.
Right.
That's real small, like fine print. Well, the first part is like very bold and large text for me. But I do it in a very like Zapfa, for those that have read any Zapfa, like his idea of like sublimation and his like other three coping mechanisms with consciousness and pessimism of the world is like, I can admit many ways mine's a coping mechanism. People will like mock me for that, but I'm also like, everything is for most people, you just refuse to acknowledge that's what it is. But it's also I do have a sense of like duty or responsibility that's very personal for me because I don't like to extend it to other people. So I wouldn't quite call it moralizing, at least externally, where I feel like I should and need to do something. And I'm like, it's kind of like, if not to be also super egotistical, but if not me, then who? And I think more people should ask themselves that. But I know that's a controversial way of thinking about it, but yeah. Do you have anything else? I don't know. I feel like if we talk too much more, I feel like we're just going to kind of repeat ourselves. But yeah. I don't know. Do you have anything more about this?
I think it's telling that this was one of the more engaged comment sections I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if people want to talk about this, there's a grain of truth, but also it's not so universally true that there's nothing to discuss.
Right. Hmm.
Which, you know, as the Hope Corps representative here, I find hopeful.
Come on. I can. Yeah, I can't push back or I'll sound mean. I fucking hate hope shit, but I'm also like not. I'm equally not like a nihilist. By some people, even in our space, would probably call me that based off the things I say. But like, then I talk to other nihilists, and I'm just like, I just don't buy what you're saying either. In the same way, everyone's like, you're an individualist. And then individualists are like, wow, you're like a collectivist. Yeah. I'm a bit of a woke centrist.
Good points on all sides.
Something like that. Yeah. Again, nothing ever happens until something does happen. Right. But I think people are dumb to believe that they know when and what that thing will be.
Yeah.
I think we need to acknowledge that we don't know. Also, I'm going to add an obligatory like PS years that my roommate, when I showed my roommate this, my roommate's like, this is kind of stupid because what is history? History is just a story we tell ourselves. So the belief that there's an end to it is just another story that we tell ourselves. And that's not a totally accurate depiction because she said way more mean words about the author and what the author said, but it's not totally, yeah. Whatever, I don't know. how many more times am I going to say Yeah, you wanna wrap this up then?
Be gay, do crimes.
All right, this has been Artemis.
No, and Hibiscus.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosamante. The What's New was written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and...
spelled correctly. So if that's spelled wrong, someone's going to hear about it.
We hope this podcast is useful too and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious.